Good evening, everybody. This is National Liberty Alliance with our Monday night show. It's 9:59. We're a little late this week, and this is our weekly show, 3/23/2020. And it's good to have everybody. Okay, so I'm gonna go into lecture mode. I can't play a song or do all that stuff. We're going to skip that for tonight since we're already an hour into this. And if you want to get into the queue, I'm going to go ahead. Good. Okay, now, Jan, I guess we should do announcements first before we do that. I want some people to get in the queue that have been trying to get in and haven't been, that we've been leaving there. I know JoJo Baby was one. But, Jan, do we have any announcements before we go into question and answer?
Well, let's see. I guess the first is this was to be a night where John talks about the committee man and grassroots meetings that we're going to start. In the newsletter this week, I put some comments on how to use MMS for people who are concerned about the coronavirus that we're experiencing. There's a couple references there, or links to a pretty good amount of information there, as well as directions for using it. There's another clicker there. You can go follow the link in order to order MMS if you like. MMS is apparently quite effective in stopping the coronavirus, so if you don't have some, you might want to consider getting some. I've had it for 10 years, and it keeps almost forever. It's a very, very good and natural healing way. I also put on an interesting letter, I guess I would call it, from Robert. Talks about his feelings at this time, and I thought it was very well written and very apropos and very current. So I would suggest that when you get a minute, take a look at the top of the newsletter and read through what Robert had to say to both all of the members of NLA and anybody else.
Was that Robert Bristow or Robert?
Robert Overhill.
Okay.
Yep, Robert Overhill. And he would be happy to have you share it anywhere that you would like to put it. Put it on your Facebook page. Any place that you can think of to get it out there. It was meant for general consumption by the public at large, so by all means, spread it to anybody that you think might be interested. In terms of where do we stand on committeemen militia leaders for the 10 districts, we're still short one lead, and that is for region number 5. And I keep forgetting to pull the map up. That would be North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, and I think one more. Let's see, what is it? Here it is. Wisconsin would be the other one. And Nebraska also. Now, you don't have to live in those states, actually. It would be convenient, I guess, if you did, but there's reportedly not much travel involved, so there will not be initially many meetings with, say, the local county organizers, although this is one of the things that we're setting up, trying to set up tonight to get people interested and talk to the local county people, and the state coordinator should spend some time at the meetings with the county organizers in their county, for whatever county they are, which would then, and these would be physical, face-to-face meetings. They would not be on our Monday night call system, that sort of thing. And I'm sure John is going to go into much, much more detail on that, so I'm not going to dwell on that. Gerard still has a Patriot Soapbox meeting at 11 a.m. and 1 to 1 p.m. Eastern each Wednesday. Brent has one, I believe, which is every Tuesday and Thursday from 11 to 1. And I put 3 links that you can use to watch them live anytime you feel so inclined. And take a watch and listen to them. It's well worth your time. Other than that, I think what I have left then would be questions, unless there's someone else who has an announcement they would like to make.
Is John still doing Patriot Soapbox on Tuesdays? No.
No, he dropped off.
Okay.
So yeah, it's just you and Brent right now that are talking on Patriot Soapbox.
All right. Good. So how many questions do you have? A lot?
I have a goodly number, about 2 pages.
Oh, wow.
One of them, a page and a half, because one of them is a statement, which I'm not going to read because it's very long. Mm-hmm. The rest are questions. Would you like to get started on questions?
Yeah, we'll do a few. Also, I want to get Brent in here before too late, and we already had some questions that he may want to chime in on some legal stuff here for people.
Okay.
So, let me get back to my screen. I ended up in my email here. Hang on a minute. I can find. Okay. Very good. So, go ahead with a question, and we'll see how that goes.
Okay. Family courts are not judiciary. How does one simply assert that they are not? They do not want any part of such a court system?
Well, they're not judiciary in the sense that, you know, where you have the regular normal course of your constitutional rights. Not that you get that in any court as far as that go, but the family court, they give big leeway to do whatever because it's family court. Now you can push it into a higher court, and they hate that. They don't like to do that. John and I did that for somebody one time, and it really worked well because they didn't want to go there, and so they fixed everything right away. They came to a settlement. So you just sue them in the Supreme Court, in the next higher court. Family court is a lower court. And you bring it, you know, you sue them for jurisdiction or whatever. Most of what they're doing, they don't have jurisdiction, so you sue them for jurisdiction. Now you can sue them in the federal court, but with family court, you can also just bump it up into the next court and take a whack at them, you know, and say that they don't have jurisdiction, and they're violating unalienable rights. And if I did a case like that, I would set it up in such a manner that it would be very easy to bring it into the federal court, because I would only bring them in there complaining about my unalienable rights that they're violating. And I think that's the easiest. They can't argue. It's very hard for them to argue that. And that's kind of what we did, because, you know, they don't follow. They don't have any kind of like restraints at all. You have no recourse in there. And I look at the regular court isn't much better, but it is better in a certain sense. If you can get the case pulled into the next court up, they don't operate the way the family court does. You know, you're able to lay on the law better and jurisdiction better. So that would be my suggestion. Just sue in the next higher court or sue in the federal court, you know.
Okay. How does one protect one's families from armed police officers who are part of kidnapping children?
That's a good question.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
How do you protect them from armed police? Well, first of all, you don't let them in unless they have a warrant, and they usually don't ever have a warrant. They can't, you know, unless somebody says you're killing somebody or doing something right away, there's no way that a police officer can force yourself in the door. Now, usually they're there with a social worker or somebody like that. That's the complainant. And the cop is just there to try to give them credibility. If you call them on the carpet and say, where's your warrant and stuff, and you tell the officer, look, you're doing an illegal act because this person is violating my unalienable rights, and there's no warrant, and you need to leave now. That's the easiest way to get rid of the cops. And usually the cops don't want to get into that. Just be very, very respectful. Do not let them in the door. Do not open the door. Matter of fact, Talk to them through the door or out a window. Don't step out of the house. And don't sit there and wring your hands and don't admit to anything. You know what I mean? Just let them, if it's something so bad, they should be able to get a warrant from a judge. If they have a warrant from a judge, there's not too much you can do because they're going to come in, they're going to bust the door down, they're going to throw cuffs on you, they're going to throw you in jail. And there's not much you can do about that. I mean, if other than flee, you know, if you think they're coming and for whatever reason, I don't know. The trouble with this business with the family court and all that, a lot of times it's a spouse problem where two spouses are fighting. That's very difficult because you got somebody making a complaint and an accusation. And so, you know, what's the courts going to do? They're going to side with one or the other, or the guy who usually gets there first. You know, in legal stuff, it's the guy that gets there first that has the advantage. You know, you always, it's very hard to be a defendant, and that's why it's always better to try to countersue and go on the offensive instead of the defensive. But the best advice I could give you about cops with guns and your kids is don't let them in the house. And if they don't have a warrant, they have no right to come in. Now, if they don't have a warrant and they come in anyway, which they may do, they may decide to kick the door down because some cops are that stupid. And at that point, you got $1 million lawsuit or whatever, you know. So, you know, that's the best advice I give you. You know, you pay your money and you take your chances. But it helps to know the law, and it helps to know, you know, to school them on it when they're there and make them know that in no uncertain terms that you're going to hold not only the police, but that official that's there at the door making the complaint, and you're going to hold them responsible for a false report or whatever. And look, if it's so serious that they got to bust the door down, then there has to be a judge somewhere that is willing to sign a warrant on that. Otherwise, they don't belong there. So that's my answer.
In both of my parents' last wills, I am named the personal representative and executor of both. Did I hear John come on?
I thought he said something. I couldn't hear him. He was very low.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Very low, John.
Yeah, you're very low.
All right, let me go work on that.
Okay. Good luck, John.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me read it again. In both my parents' last wills, I am named the personal representative and executor of both of my parents' estates. False claims of elderly abuse were brought against me in 2018. The judge and lawyer recommended that, in my best interest, it was for my son to be made guardian and conservator for both of my parents. This act was an attack and took my rights and my parents' rights. In July 2019, my father passed away and my son disrespected my dad's will. The courts assisted my son in this dishonor and disrespect, and they protected my son as he committed fraud and also put my mom in a facility where they were given orders to not let my mom leave without me or leave with me. Mother was very depressed until her passing last Thursday night. She died alone as a result of personal greed of family members, and the county court personnel helped this to happen. I had all of the habeas corpus papers ready to file with the joinder to NLA, but she didn't make it. Can I still enter the habeas corpus forms that are done and ready? Is there any benefit to this? If not, what can I do to receive compensation for the time stolen from me and my mom? Or can I file something to bring consequences to the corrupt people who caused or let this happen?
Now, I'm a little confused
about that. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, now you're
am
louder.
Am I coming in loud enough?
Yep.
All right, yeah, I finished the question, the answer, and then what I'd like to do, I'd like to cover something which I wanted to cover tonight on the committee men. Maybe take about 15, 20 minutes, and then we'll go back to Q&A or something. But mm-hmm. Go ahead, you can finish the question.
I think it was done, but I don't know if you heard it, so I might have to repeat it if you want to answer it.
It's a long question.
let's put it aside. Are you going to answer? Did you hear it, Gerard? Do you want to answer it or what?
Well, I had some questions about the questions, but we can wait. I wasn't sure.
Some of
who
these
the
questions you can't answer because they don't give you enough information.
Yeah,
so.
I understand. Yeah, but you know,
right,
I didn't know.
Let's forego that, and what we'll do, let's stick to the program. We're already an hour and 15 minutes in, and nothing but problems. And hopefully, I got all my problems figured out. But anyway, I want to cover something. You know, last time we got together and we spoke, we talked about the committee men. I also believe we spoke quite a bit about trying to organize on the county level. And that's where we're at right now, organizing on the county level. But again, before I continue, I am coming in clear and loud enough?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Good.
There was a question in here about somebody ran for committee man and was contested by three people and they took him to court. It was very interesting because it sounds to me like they didn't do anything like they were supposed to. It should have never went to court because if you're running for committee man in the same precinct, all they can do is run against you. I don't know how anybody could contest you being a committee man. You know, they must have been using party rules or something.
Well, what they do is they try to challenge your paperwork to throw you out. Of course, they use party rules.
No, he had three people.
But he wasn't following our instructions, I presume.
Obviously not. But yeah. I'm saying he said three separate people, three people, not the party.
Right. Well, they're not going to give up easy.
Contested him running for committee man. And I'm like, how could they contest you running for committee man? I mean, they can run against you. They could get signatures themselves. Then you both got to go on the ballot. That type of stuff, right?
Well, what they do is they contest your signatures. You know how the game works. They contest your signatures.
Oh, so maybe that's what they did. Yeah,
yeah,
he didn't say that.
He wasn't taken to court yet.
He went to court, and none of those three people showed up, and the judge sided with them anyway.
Oh, well, that's good. Then he got in. Did he run as an elected committee member?
No, the judge did not side with him. The judge sided with the three people that didn't show up, who defaulted.
Okay.
Yeah,
maybe
we can expand upon that later, but
I just wanted to mention there's
that.
No way to go with that because they own the whole system.
Right.
Until the people become educated and decide to get up and take it back, they'll continue like this. They'll continue with party bosses. They will continue to put the criminal on the right or the criminal left. As soon as Trump leaves and maybe another election or two in, we'll be right back here again unless the people take it back.
Look, at my answer to him is, the judges has always told us that they're private associations and they won't get involved. So how could the judge step in if the people weren't there that made the accusations?
Yeah, but not all judges know that to begin with, number one.
Well, that's where I would have went. I would have said,
Number two, the county chair. Look at this. This guy's coming in unconventionally. He's coming in outside of the party. He's not going to kiss the ring. So what happens is the county chairman makes a call to the judge and fixes it, and that's it. It's done.
It's all fixed
because we have such great courts because, again, the people refuse to step up and take control of it. And until we do that, they're going to just continue to give us courts of injustice and continue to abuse us and continue to destroy us with all this politicking and funny money. And it goes on and on and on, the 17th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, and so on. But anyway, this is the plan to take it back, and this is the time people get active. You know, this coronavirus, or whatever exactly is going on, I'm hearing quite a few stories. I sort of tend to lean with Dave over there at the X-22 report and what he's saying. But nevertheless, this has caused a major problem. It put a hold here in New York. You couldn't go out and finish off your petitions. And you couldn't go file them because the governor has shut New York down. And, you know, this is a problem across the nation. So this might be something good for us because we will be able to hopefully run for committeemen in areas where, the process has already passed and they have to do something about it. But again, there's a couple of strategies we can use with that. But nevertheless, we still need to take control of the system. Whether we take control of it this year for 2021 or we take control of it in 2021 for 2022, in any event, we have to organize. And last time we spoke on this issue, which again, I think was last Monday, and then we had a special meeting I'm not sure about last Monday. Let me take a quick look to see. I think we did talk about the committeeman last Monday on our program. We talked about people's duties, so we did talk about the committeeman and a number of other things. And then, of course, we had that special meeting. I think it was on Thursday of last week. But right now, I put up a new page. And if you look under People's Duty, NationalLibertyAlliance.org, and highlight People's Duty on the blue bar or the purple bar there, and we put in the first page on the top is called Organizing Your County. But we also put in a register to vote page for anybody who's not registered to vote. You can click on that tab there and register online, and you should do so now. And it doesn't matter which party you really get into, whether it's Republican or the Democratic Party, either or, because we need to take them both back. And we do have quite a few Democrats with us, as I've seen looking through some of the list of people who are signing up for this process. Now, underneath that are underneath this tab are all a lot of other things that we need to work with, and we need to deal with all of these situations on a grassroots level. So it's time now to organize our counties. We've put together we've cut the nation up into 10 districts. And those 10 districts, and again, we talked about this, I think, last week, those 10 districts are broken up. So many states in each one of those districts. And it's working with the state coordinators in order to go down and get a hold of the county organizers, the people who have signed up for county organizers, to try to get them activated again, and for those who are paying attention to get involved on a grassroots level. So anyway, we have information on how to become a committeeman. We have information or a list of people who have signed up for committeemen, and if you've signed up for committeemen, you can see the list. And you can look for the people in your county and make a connection. And also, we have here the committeeman proposed party rules, which is something we have to really think about in the very near future. People should be reading this stuff and getting familiar with it. We also spoke about the Republic Review, which is an important process to bring the states back in and to get their sovereignty back, because right now with the 17th Amendment, they're not sovereign any longer. They have just total controlled by the federal government. Now, underneath the Republic, and of course, that's the job that the committeeman is going to be working with and should be able to push that process through to bring back the power and the authority back to the states. We also have a militia registration. Everyone should sign up for the militia registration, get yourself registered, and get involved in your local grassroots community and the county level. Underneath that, we have the militia members in your county, so you can find others that have joined in under your county. We have the militia rules for the several states. And then, of course, we have some information on becoming a jury administrator and some information on the county sheriff. Now, all of that working together works on a grassroots level, and all of those items should be operational within every county. And we could make that happen. And it starts with one person. It starts with you, whoever's listening. It starts with one person listening and deciding, I'm going to do this in my county. So we put together a page. Again, it's the top page, Organizing Your County. I'm going to quickly go through this, and then if anybody has any questions after this, you can ask some questions on this. And, of course, you know, you can ask questions next week and so on. But we need to really start to take control of our grassroots. So I'm just going to read some of this information. If anybody wants to follow along, again, NationalLibertyAlliance.org, highlight People's Duty on the purple bar, and then click on Organize Your County. Now, you can print this page out. This is also a PDF page, so it can be printed out, and you can have a copy, and you'll be able to work your organization off of that. I tried to make this as simple as possible. But it starts here. Organizing begins with one person taking the initiative, one person, and to get things going by finding one other person. That's your job. One person deciding, I'm going to do what I got to do in my county, and find one other person in your county. So finding one other person, and then another, until you have four people willing to hold or temporarily hold the following executive positions. So we're breaking this down pretty much to work within the county level to organize all of these things, organize the militia, organize working with the administrators, organize with also the committee men and also the Republic Review and so on. But in this, we need to put together a committee. Now, in the committee men, they have what's called the executive committee. So for lack of another phrase, we'll use that phrase, executive committee. And that should consist of a chairman and a co-chairman, a treasurer, and a secretary. Obviously, the secretary keeps the records, make sure the paperwork is flowing as far as whatever business takes place at the meetings and so on. And, of course, the treasurer takes the funds and purchases whatever is necessary, which is bare minimum. But, you know, we do collect, or should collect, on the county level, and it remains on the county level for them to use for whatever projects they want to use it for, maybe even getting cards or flyers or whatever they want to do with. Now, the chairman and the co-chairman ultimately just make the meeting work. None of these people have any more power or authority than anyone else, and you can change them by vote at any given time. It's just a matter of keeping things in order and in process. And if someone has some high skills on secretarial work and they're willing to take that position, that person should obviously fill that position, and so on. Now, and I'm going to kind of read some of the stuff off this page. In the beginning, you should meet somewhere convenient for coffee, maybe on a Saturday morning or in the evening after work, to start discussing ideas. And that's just, you know, starting off with two people, to three people, to four people, and maybe a little more. And you continue to meet off the fly at least once a week. It's important to meet once a week because, first of all, we got to get this in motion, number one, and get a really good meeting within the county to take place and introduce to the people what exactly it is that we are doing and how we intend on taking this nation back and bringing the control of the nation back to the people. So, again, meeting at least once a week in the beginning, just nonchalantly, nowhere special. Again, you can get together in a diner or some coffee house and just meet off the fly and just get things going. Activity creates more activity. Obviously, we can't do this once a month to get things going. Once you do get going, meetings once a month should be sufficient. But it may take a couple of weeks to a month to really get this thing off and going. So anyway, meeting once a week for 20 minutes or more, or until you have these four positions filled. Once you organize the aforesaid executive committee, you find a venue in your county, which is centrally located, making it convenient for all to travel to. Libraries are probably one of the best, and town halls are also good, too. They usually, a lot of the libraries in the town halls, they already got the projector set up and the whole system working for you. So you only have to bring maybe your own laptop or a smartphone to plug in to play whatever kind of a video that you want to play. We're going to do numerous PowerPoint videos, which we'll get to in a minute. So anyway, other venue ideas, of course, the library and the town hall. I always like the library. That seems to be the best. Most of the libraries close down at 9, which is probably fine for us, 9:30. You know, if your meetings start at 7 and you take it to 9 and you do it once a month, that could work out fine. But you have the libraries, you have the town hall. You can approach private clubs. You can use the back room of a bar. We did that down in New York City, or a restaurant, or a diner, like Denny's or something like that. There's lots of places you can find a venue. But the key point to this thing is to try to get it centrally located to the population. You don't want to, get a meeting going in the corner of the county or far north, northwest. And then someone the county corner southeast has to travel that whole way, maybe travel an hour to get to the meeting. You want to try to find something centrally located so nobody has to travel any more than 15, 20 minutes and occasionally maybe a little longer than that. And that's a very important point because people aren't going to drive those long distances all too often. Now, there's also an online venue we can use to support this whole process. Before I continue, because it's awfully quiet here, I am still going through here, am I? I don't trust this online meeting anymore. Looks like I am anyway. I think I am. I hope I am. Am I coming through?
Yeah, you're there. You're fine.
I don't want to be talking to myself, so I do that on my own as it is. I don't need to do it now. Anyway, okay, so we have an online venue that we have used, and I know I found this back in 2007, 2008 with the Ron Paul thing when he was running for president, and then, of course, the all the Tea Parties and different liberty groups that we've been involved with. There's an online venue called meetup.com. It's pretty inexpensive. It's something like, I don't know, $12 or $15 every 3 months or something like that to open it. Once you open it, people join it. They don't have to pay anything. They just join in. But it's a great tool for organizing and communicating with the grassroots groups. And we should use uniform names when we do this to open this up. So for instance, you might want to use your state abbreviation, the name of your county, and then Liberty Alliance. So across the nation, it will give us some uniformity. It will also really give us some more presence because you'll have, for instance, New York, Dutchess County, Liberty Alliance, New York, Green County, Liberty Alliance, Orange County, Liberty Alliance, and so on and so forth. And then, of course, you know, all the states doing the same thing. And it'll also fall in an alphabetical order when we put this information into a list, putting it on our website, where people can click on the links to find their groups locally and connect with the meetup, whoever created the meetup. They'll be able to connect with that individual to find out where the meetings are and to connect with that meetup group. Once they connect with the meetup group, you know, all the information is there, the reminders that a meeting's coming up, another reminder the day of, and also information and email and communications and discussions on boards between the members in the grassroots within that county. So it's a real great venue, definitely something that we should all be using once we start developing our counties. Now, also the first official meeting, when you book your venue for a date, maybe 20 or 30 days after you've organized, we'll call it again for lack of another phrase, we'll call it the executive committee. Once you got the four or five or six people and you're now going to find a venue and you set up a venue and you set the first meeting maybe 20 to 30 days away, which gives you time to invite people to come to that meeting. Also, the meetup group that you start, people will be looking for activities in their own areas. And so someone living in that county and maybe in close by in the towns or whatever might come across that meetup group, see what you're all about, and show up for a meeting to see what's going on, as long as you know they become interested in what it is that we're trying to do. Now, the first meeting, as I mentioned, should be about 20 days away. And then after that, it should be done on a monthly basis, a duration of about 2 hours, usually 7 to 9. That's what we used to do. And we have to stay on point. One of the problems we had when we tried to encourage people to meet on grassroots levels and do different things and talk, we didn't lay out a program for them. So the next thing you know, they're talking about everything but what they should be talking about. One of the things you want to do is when you have a meeting, or you're going to have a meeting, you have four or five people, all of those people should bring guests. And then at the first meeting, for the second meeting, you should tell everybody should bring guests, bring people. We need to grow. We need to get this message out. You can contact Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org. We'll have to set something up for this if it gets too busy. And ask him for a list of NLA members with their names and their phone numbers in your county. So that's one way you can find people to connect with. And we've been having a little trouble connecting with people and trying to get them activated. And a lot of people don't even know about the Monday program, but we try to get them activated. But if you're calling them from within their county saying, hey, we're getting together, we have a meeting here, why don't you come down? I see you're a member at NLA. That's a good way to get someone that's kind of, lump on a log at this point, to get them reactivated, to get them interested and involved, because it's physical. We hear all the time people who will ask, you know, how can I connect with people in my neighborhood? Where can I find people? Sometimes it sounds like these people really aren't paying a lot of attention to what we're doing on the Monday night meetings. Maybe they're not aware of them, or a lot of other things that we're doing. And of course, they are looking for the grassroots, and that's what we want to build. We want to build the grassroots because that's where the control of our nation should be from within our counties. Some of the places you can find people and invite people, Gerard brought this up a couple of weeks ago or so, is the fire department, volunteer fire departments particularly, but I don't know necessarily that they'd be volunteer, of course, to make the invite. But you might get a lot of interest with people there to invite them to the meeting. Volunteer ambulance corps, volunteer rescue corps, homeschoolers. Make some connection with different groups of homeschoolers. Invite them. They'd be very interested to come to these meetings. And when they come, I think they join up and get involved because they are active already. They've already started with the education of their children. You can invite other meetup groups. You can go to meetup groups yourself. There's all kinds of meetup groups still going on, and you can find a lot of them up on meetup.org, or .com, I mean. And you can find different groups, find out when they're meeting, and visit the meeting, and then ask to whoever's running the meeting that you want to make an announcement concerning what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance and what you're doing there at there in the local county that you're at to bring things together to get these things off the ground. So you can find people through those meetup groups and other liberty groups. You can go to gun clubs and invite people. You can go to veterans clubs and invite people. You can post invitations on bulletin boards in stores, colleges, Craigslist, and so on. So I'm sure other people will come up with a lot of other ideas on how they can also find people who might be interested in inviting them to the program. Now, the meeting protocol, and this is extremely important, because this is where we had a problem. You know, when we tell people, we give them a lot of information, like we have on our website, but if we don't lay out a plan, and you know, sometimes someone gets a hold of the group, they're out there, and next thing you know, they're controlling everything, and they're bringing in issues that has nothing to do with what we're trying to do. We're trying to take back this nation. We're trying to take back the controls of this nation. So we have to stay focused. So we laid out a protocol, and I'm just going to run down the list. It should start off, first of all, when you have a meeting, people should come in 15 minutes earlier, and you should have a sign-in sheet. And on that sign-in sheet, you're looking for the person's name. You don't need their full name. First name is fine. That'd be good. But they want to put their full name. That's good. But their name, the town they live in, their phone number, and their email. And that, of course, is not to be shared with necessarily with everyone, but it's for the leadership to make full contact with them and also or mostly to get them to help them connect to the meetup group and other things, other tools that we'll be using in order to move this process along. So anyway, you have that sign-up sheet. First, the order of business, as soon as business starts at 7 o'clock, should probably start off with a prayer. I figure 1 minute for that. The Pledge of Allegiance, another minute. Have everybody introduce themselves to each other. That shouldn't be any more than 4 or 5 minutes. Pass the donation can while people are introducing themselves, and of course the treasurer should record that and put it into the kitty, and start to gather some monies to purchase whatever is necessary. Again, posters, flyers, cards, different things, whatever it is that you think you need. After the committee gets to that point, after you've introduced each other, it should go right into, in the beginning, the first one, there is no reports or old business. But once you have one meeting, you know, you'll have to report, people reporting on things that they're doing or trying to do, and whatever old business might be around. And that shouldn't take any more than maybe 10 minutes. Eventually, you'll start to develop committees within the committee, you know, a group of people interested in building the militia, a group of people building the committee men, and so on and so forth. And those people would then give a report and on whatever it is that they're doing. So everybody is aware and working together to make this work. The next thing would be new business, anything that needs to be focused in on. Maybe you spend 10 minutes on that, if that. And then the event of the evening would be the topic. Usually it would be playing a PowerPoint video. It shouldn't be any longer than 40 minutes. The first meeting should be done with our plan, the NLA plan, and how we are looking to bring this all together to the grassroots and how we're looking to take control of the political process and the judicial process, and also to re-empower the states back to their sovereignty again and move the militia along within our counties and connect with other counties eventually. So after, you know, but again, the PowerPoint should be, we're going to create lots and lots of, we've got a lot of them already partially created, so I think in a couple of weeks we'll probably have a dozen or more videos up there where people can either play them online right off their computer and put it into a projector in a library or whatever, or you can download them, put them on your laptops or whatever, and then run them off the projector. You can put them on a thumb drive. If everything's set up in a library, where all you have to do is bring a thumb drive, and they've already got their laptop or some computer set up with the projector. All you have to do is put the thumb drive in there and then play the video. All these videos are PowerPoint videos, so they're instructional, and everything we're doing is instructional. But anyway, like I said, we will be creating a lot of them. We'll try to keep them all under 40 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, 40 minutes max, which will allow a discussion by the group, the people, for at least 45 minutes. After that, you close the meeting. The following info should be announced and on a flyer to hand out at the end. And that is, you should thank the people for coming, announce the date of the next meeting, invite people to sign up on themeetup.com and join your meetup. Send people to take the Government by Consent course at National Liberty Alliance. Invite people to our National Monday Night Open Forum and to keep them active. If they can't make the Monday night, let them know that they can download the audio on the Monday night page, and they can listen to it during the week as they're maybe going back and forth to work or whatever it is that they're doing. And therefore they can catch up on what's going on and get further information on all the things we're doing. We also put here a list of subject matter, topics and discussions, and the point is to stay on point. We don't want people going off onto fiction. We're not in fiction. We're in reality. We're dealing with common law. We're not dealing with the law, with the civil law. We're not dealing, not that there's any equity out there anymore, but if there's equity, we're not dealing with equity. We're not dealing with the codes and all of those things. We are dealing with the real law of the land, the Constitution, and natural law. So we need to stay on point. And I will tell you, we want to warn people, because you will get people who will come in and try to seize the opportunity to start teaching people fiction, which is, first of all, going to get you in trouble. Second of all, it's not going to save this nation, and it's taking it away from what it is that we are trying to do. That has been our biggest enemy since we've been doing this, is people coming in trying to teach that fiction. We just want the reality. We want to take back our nation and control it. So anyway, our subject matters should be topics of discussion. And again, we will supply many of them. It'll be on the committeemen, jury administration, the common law, on equity, grand jury, petit jury, the militia, the republic review, our founding documents, American heritage. And we will also write a plan on how and when the sheriff should be approached. We've got to, and to connect for posse comitatus. And it's very important to follow that protocol, because if we approach the sheriff too prematurely and he or she comes and sees what you're doing and not understanding what you're doing, maybe gets a little nervous and really kind of shies away from you or thinks you're a nut or whatever the case may be, because we're bringing in something different. So we will have a plan on how to approach the sheriff and how to do a number of things. But a lot of the key things that people need to be working on at the grassroots is, for instance, showing a video on how to do a designated petition to become a committeeman, to discuss these things, to ask questions and find answers. And if some questions come up and you're not sure of the answers, you know, you can say, hey, we'll bring that up on the next Monday night meeting. We'll talk with John or Gerard or someone up there and see if we can't find the answer to this question. No one should be embarrassed or concerned if you don't have the answer. None of us know everything. So, you know, sometimes you say, well, I got to find out. I got to research that out, or I got to see who else may know about this. So it's important that we give good information, solid information, and we don't just do it off the cuff and kind of create an answer for anything, especially with the committee men. It's a very, very tricky thing. They're going to try to throw you out every which way they can. Now, we do have a plan, or I'm going to write up a plan, shall I say, because we already formulated the plan. It's got to be written up on how we're going to approach the election of the committee men in places A, where the designating petition filings has already passed, or B, they couldn't get filed because it's taken place during this corona issue, or C is a little bit further in the future and hasn't come upon us yet. And in all three of those points, that reopens up all the states. We can run for committeemen in every state, and I think we can probably pursue it and push it in courts. Now, the reality is this. Even if we get, let's say we can get, let's say even just 5 or 10 states to do it properly in such a way that they can't reject it. And hopefully we would do a lot more than that. But let's just say it's a few states. Remember, the only elected committeemen in the state have the power and the authority to appoint every other committeeman within the state until the next election. And there's certain other things we can do to force a special election, but that we're not going to talk about at this moment. But if, let's say, we're in New York, and we got maybe, let's say, 5 or 6 elected committeemen, and let's say Jersey or Connecticut doesn't have any elected committeemen. But they have people who did run and wanted to run but couldn't get elected in time or get into the process to file the papers correctly, and we just couldn't beat it. Which, again, I don't think we'd have a problem winning it, but let's say we didn't win it. Well, then it stands to reason that either one of two things need to happen, because we can show that there are no elected committeemen. We can force a special election in that state, or we in another state, because, and this works in their logic, it shouldn't work in anyone's logic, but it works in their logic, and if they believe it, we'll do it too. And that is, we would appoint them from a national level, or let's say, you got 5 or 6 or 7 states came together, they have all elected committeemen, and we come to agree, well, okay, let's appoint committeemen in all these other states until they can get an election going. And that's a way I think we can easily beat it, even in the courts if we had to defend it, because of the way they are operating now. We'll just use what they're doing. It's not the right way to do it, but it is one way to get it through, and then we can all be on time on the next election so that everyone could be an elected committeeman and have the power and the authority to do what has to be done. So it's extremely important that everyone gets involved now. And I mentioned before that the leadership of National Liberty Alliance, and I'm including myself, everyone in National Liberty Alliance needs to become a committeeman. So everybody needs to get out there and sign up. We've only got 34 people signed up, but everybody needs to sign up. And as you have people coming into the meetings, you get local meetings going, you want all of those people to learn about the committeemen and for them to sign up. The same thing with the militia, becoming a registering for the militia. Right now we have 64 people who have done that. And that's a beginning. If we take the 64 people and the 34 people, and some of them may be the same, and we take our leadership, which I don't know that much of our leadership has really signed in on this, but maybe they have. But let's say we have 100 people out of that. We have 64 and 34, and we have then we have our leadership here at National Liberty Alliance. Let's say we have 100 people. With 100 people running for committeemen in various states, also those 100 people can start stimulating a process of a meeting within their counties, and that needs to start right away. Since we have this problem with the coronavirus, you can get together. This is time for us to get together anyway. You can get together on Skype or other venues and start discussing things locally, preparing for a meeting at some point in the near future to actually, and invite people to come and get things going. But remember, we go back to the top of the first part of this page we were talking about. Organizing begins with one person taking the initiative and to get things going by finding one other person. So one person finds another person, that's two people, and then two people find a few more people. And again, we will work with our membership list to give to anybody for their counties, whatever county they're living in and running in order to get people to come to that meeting and get things going. So I think that's pretty much it. People can read this page, and everything I just went through, it's all listed on this page. And on the top of the page, you can click on, it says click here to print to this page, and a PDF will open up, and you can save it to your computer, or you can print it, and you have a written copy of this so that you can make your plan and get things going and take control of our nation, of our government on the grassroots level. This is what we're here for, is to help the people to organize, to communicate, to become educated, and to get sparked up and going and moving on their grassroots level to start to do the things we need to do. And so everybody needs to get out and going now and get involved. So please, if you haven't signed up to register on the militia, then you need to do so now. And you could do that right on the page there. Let's see, and under people's duty, you click on the information there, and you'll on the pages there, and you'll get in there. For instance, there's militia registration. Click on that and register. The committee man process. Click on that and go and check the button to become a committee man, and your name will show up on a list, and we'll again connect people within their counties. And also, again, people will draw wherever they can to get people to come to the meetings to grow this movement. So anyway, that's pretty much it. That's about all I have. Gerard, I guess I'll pass it back to you for open forum and take it to wherever you're going to go. I don't know if Brent's here. Maybe Brent's here.
Yeah, Brent is here. I don't know if he's got something to say, but...
Okay, we're going to talk a little more about this next week, and we're going to be starting posting these videos up there, these PowerPoint videos. I'm going to try to start doing some of them this week so that you'll see what people need to learn. And so that's how you run your meeting. You run your meeting working around a particular PowerPoint video, which is going to educate people and empower people. And each month you'll have a new thing to look at as they continue to come here at National Liberty Alliance and get educated with our courses, and maybe come to our Monday night meetings. Okay, that's it. You got it, Gerard. Thanks.
John, I just wanted to say that, I don't know if I'm backfeeding from somebody. I'm getting a lot of noise back through. I can hear myself. But anyway, there's a lot of stuff going on with local leaders, mayors, people in towns. They're making laws and taking advantage of this pandemic by saying we're shutting down, no alcohol or guns being sold, and just really locking the people down like under martial law, because it's going to their head. Now, how does that affect us? I mean, look at this stuff has to go away. This whole shelter in place, at some point it needs to go away. But we could have a problem with these leaders that it goes to their head. And they're treating it like martial law, taking steps that are unconstitutional, stopping the people from assembling. Look, you're not going to do your committee man thing if you got some maniac in a town that says, no, you can't do it. And it's in place now, and they're not going to lift it. So it's very important. The whole sheriff part and the militia part is necessary for us to force them to end the martial law. And they're not calling it martial law, but make no mistake about it, it's martial law powers. They got the National Guard on alert in order to keep, they say, oh, no, they're only going to help keep, with feeding and doing all this stuff. But that's, as far as I'm concerned, I don't see any of those problems anywhere. But,
well, remember that the martial law mentality is happening only on state levels, particularly like New York and California, and I don't know how many, maybe Washington. I think those are the only three states I heard that have really gotten radical.
You got county people outlawing buying guns and ammo in their county.
I understand that, but the thing is that, just so we know, this is not a federal move, and Trump is determined not. They've been trying to push him to do martial law, and he refuses. But you see, we have the problem we have is they're out of control, and we have no control over them. And we're trying to fix that control.
Well,
bear in mind, I don't think this is going to last much longer than a couple of weeks to a month more. I think in the next couple of weeks, it's really going to, you know, die down very quickly, because I think a cure is going to arise. That's what I think is going to happen from listening to what X-22 has to say and some other sources. Mm-hmm. You know, that a cure is going to come up, but they already got a cure, they claim.
They have a cure, absolutely.
The president was pressed at a press conference about it, and they were trying to get him, you know, to really confirm or unaffirm potential use of two other drugs. And he kept saying, oh, it looks real good, but we'll see what happens. You see, he doesn't want to move it yet, because I think he still needs that 10 days. You know, he was talking about 14 days, and I think we've got 9 or 10 days left. And he needs those days. They're called, I think Hugh calls them, the days of darkness. And this is a time when he has to accomplish things and is trying to really do it, on the one hand, kind of behind the scenes, but on the other hand, not allowing it to get taken out of control and maybe have to deal with an insurrection here or there by the people. And I think that's one of the main reasons he pushes, well, people shouldn't gather together any greater than 10. But we don't have to gather literally right now. We need to plan. We need to locate a place. We need to get on the phones and communicate with a few people in our county to start to discuss these things and make a plan to find a venue and to prepare for that venue and set a date. And by the time you get to that, hopefully this will be over and we'll be moving. And if we want to prevent these people from doing the things that we're talking about right now, you know, preventing the sales of guns or ammo or whatever it is that they're trying to do, okay, well, if we want to really prevent them from doing it, the only way we're going to do that is by taking back our courts and getting active on the grassroots and taking control of our nation by controlling the political and judicial processes. And you have to be educated to do that. And so that's what we have to do. We have a duty to do that. It's time for the people to roll up their sleeves and let's go do it now. And we need to wake each other up, and we need to get it done. But I don't think it really affects us right now, because we're in a time of planning. I don't think we're going to be able to plan a real meeting, at least not for another 30 or 40 days. So I think we're good. Mm-hmm. I think by that point we'll be good.
Yeah, well, I hope so. Anyway.
All right, well, anyway, I'll pass it over to you.
Okay. Let's see. Let's unmute Brent if we can find him.
I think I am.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Brent, do you have an agenda for tonight? I'll let you... we're at 11 o'clock, so go ahead and you can take some time and do what
do you
plan on doing if you
yes.
have something.
Do you want to save time for questions? What's on your mind?
We should save some time, because there's a couple people in there that I missed, and I told them to get in early and I would pick them. And there's
okay.
one there that I would like you to answer that we hit before the meeting. So,
okay.
I don't know, you know, it's 11, so if you go 20 minutes, a half hour, and then save a half hour afterwards for a couple of these other people that are in the queue that I would like to get
okay.
to.
Okay. Well,
okay.
Thank you, Gerard. This is Brent. My name is Brent. Colin Winters, commonlawyer.com, commonlawyer.com, and my comments are my own, not necessarily the opinions of National Liberty Alliance, but as they've been kind enough to do in the past few years now, they let me come on and talk. I'm going to do something a little bit different tonight. I've been wanting to do this, and I don't know what the right time is. Depends on what people are prone to listen to, but I want to talk about BS. BS versus bullion. BS versus bullion, the common lawyer comments. I used to write a blog, and that was a chore for a fellow that never learned how to type, and I finally gave it up. But I wrote this one, and I worked on it pretty hard, trying to understand something that folk had been asking me about, namely, how do the banksters work their system? And I tried to boil it down to fundamentals. And I called it BS versus bullion, and I start this way. with a poem by yours truly, that I wrote up back when I was in the mining business. My story is curious, but this I know. When it happens to you, here's how it will go. In your haste for bonanza, you'll try to stay true, hoping against hope, good will happen to you. But it's BS, less it's bullion, the old miner did say. His wise words still echo, by night and by day. And as you moil for gold, you can hear them resound, while working some liar's hole way down in the ground. And during that time, I came to some conclusions about what money is. That's been over 30 years ago. And I'm reading to you, not reading, but I'm going to comment to you from a little booklet I wrote a long time ago called The Law of the Miner. The Law of the Miner. And my point is to encourage Americans to demand gold and silver coin over paper money for five reasons. Number one, our present economic plight. Number two, our Constitution's demand. Number three, our common law's first principles. Number four, the testimony of the Bible. And number five, the lessons of history. And working in the gold fields and the gold mines, I learned the ancient laws of the miner. I don't know that they're written down anywhere. I wrote them down. And here they are. There are 10 of them. 10 ancient laws of the miner. Number one, most gold mines are holes in the ground with liars at the top and dupes at the bottom. Now that's a quote. I didn't say that. I found that. Second, 100% of nothing is nothing. Third, no sense fighting over gold before you have any. Fourth, gold is where you find it. People ask where it is, it's where you find it. Fifth, if it runs around in the gold pan, don't chase it because it ain't gold. Sixth, fool's gold sparkles only in the sun. Real gold always lusters even in the shade. Seventh, competition is not only the life of trade, but also the very trade of life. Eighth, 80% of gold is in the deepest 20% of the pay dirt. Ninth, the closer you get to gold, the more sparkles you will see. And tenth, promises are words, words are wind, and wind without bullion is BS. BS. And at home, we had BS. That was short for bottom sediment. Bottom sediment, because that's what collected in the oil collection tank. And it had to be cleaned out because it hindered the collection of oil. In our own day, paper money is plentiful. In fact, within the last 3 years, and this was written in 2012, within the last 3 years, the Federal Reserve bankers have issued nearly four times more paper money that had been issued in all of our nation's previous history. That's worth letting soak in. Four times more issued in the last 3 years, that had been 2009, 2012, more issued than in all of the nation's previous history in just those short years. And the bottom line conclusion that I made was this. A country's failure to distinguish and choose bullion, that is gold and silver, over BS, that is paper money, will destroy that country. It's not a question of if, it is a question of when. It will. It is not a question of will. When? Unless it's measurable in carats, it's counterfeit. And these things the central bankers know very well. Accordingly, they hoard gold for themselves and issue counterfeit paper money to all others, refusing even to back these purported promises with the gold that they have hoarded. And worse yet, congressmen, presidents, and judges protect their sham with a vengeance. We must keep in mind our oppression is not by a system or an ideology, such as communism or Islam. Our oppression is by men. All oppressions are always by men. Systems or ideologies become tools, but don't get that mixed up. There is no war against communism that will ever be won, or a war against Islam. No, you're warring. If you war, effectively, you war against evil men. That's the problem. And them by plundering and abusing Americans. The Fed caused our banks and economy to fail. For the upteenth time, and this is back, remember, during the crisis of 2008 and 2009, of course, they'll do another one probably, they demanded that the American taxpayer bail them out, took the bailout money, and gave it to their American and foreign family friends who are also bankers. And even at its high price, local buyers purchase gold because the middlemen are paying for it. And the middlemen are buying because the central bankers have the taxpayers' money via the income tax to buy it from the middlemen. Keep in mind, not one penny paid in income taxes goes to support any function of government. It all goes, said the Grace Commission, to the Federal Reserve bankers by way of interest payments. Remember, the Grace Commission was the commission that Ronald Reagan put in place when he's elected president to study the income tax system. This was their conclusion. No income tax payments go to anything in the way of government services, but go all to the Federal Reserve Bank for interest payments on loans that were never made, not in reality. But why pay interest on worthless IOUs that Congress printed and gave to the Federal Reserve bankers at printing costs, about 6 cents per bill at that time, whether a $1 bill or a $100 bill? The cost is the same, 6 cents for the ink and the paper. Probably a little more now, they've got that fancy strip in there, but still, doesn't amount to much. Collapse this shell game into a single transaction, and one sees that the central bankers are buying this gold with the seller's tax payments. The bankers get the gold, which always retains its buying power. The people get the banker's paper, which never retains its buying power. I'm going to quote Lord Acton. Remember Lord Acton, Lord Dalberg Emmerich Acton? He's the one that said, power corrupts an absolute. Power corrupts absolutely. He said a lot of things that were wise. But he said this also. He said, the issue which has swept down the centuries and which will have to be fought sooner or later is the people versus the banks. Indeed, the question of the banks and their monopoly power to issue and debase money controls all other questions in this present life here on earth. The United States is the only country that has ever successfully fought the banker's cabal. Loaning money to a country at interest, the very country that printed it and gave it to them for nothing in the first place. Let me repeat that. This is the way central banking works. The London Central Bank was, of course, before our Federal Reserve Bank, it was established, I think, 1691. And I remember reading some of the old Englishmen saying, this can't last. Why? Because these banks are loaning money to us, our country, at interest, the very country that printed the money and gave it to them for nothing in the first place. How can that persist? And we got rid of Britain's empire. We left Britain's empire by war to rid ourselves of England's central bankers. Fundamentally, that's what our separation from Britain was all about. The trading arm of the British East India Company was the trading arm of the Bank of London, and the Bank of London, through that trading arm, along with Parliament and the King, the beneficiaries of that system, demanded that the Americans be under Admiralty law and trade only with the British East India Company. Presidents Jefferson, Jackson, and Lincoln warned us that such men, and I'll use their words, such men, what men? Bankers. Jackson particularly, he called them vicious vermin. Vicious vermin. How does their sham work? Keep in mind, since fraud is the goal, one cannot expect these transactions that I'm going to recite to make sense. Don't try to make sense out of this system. It's a senseless system. First step, the Federal Reserve Bank gives Congress an IOU. An IOU is a promise to pay money. It's also called a bond. They give Congress an IOU for $100. Second, Congress prints an IOU, called a Federal Reserve promissory note, payable from the bank to Congress for another $100 and gives it to the bank. Then the bank pays the 6 cent printing cost and signs it. That Congress prints these Federal Reserve notes and not the bank is to give the appearance, you see, of legality. Congress prints the money. Looks legal. And at this point, Congress has a right to demand $200 from the bank, and the bank is out an additional 6 cents, the cost of printing one more IOU. Third step, Congress prints 7 more IOUs for $100, called Federal Reserve notes, by which the bank promises to pay Congress $700 more. Now, if you say to yourself while you're listening, I'm lost already, don't feel like you're not able to follow sense. This is senseless. I'm just going through what happens, but it is utterly senseless. So the bank promises to pay Congress $700 more and sells them to the bank for 42 cents, printing cost, of course, 7 bills, 6 cents a bill, with the understanding that Congress will demand payment only on the first and second $100 IOUs, but will never demand payment on the following 7 IOUs. Now, simply put, though the law will support Congress' demand of the entire $900 of IOUs, Congress agrees to demand only 200 of them. Now, strictly speaking, nothing so far is illegal. Indeed, no law forces Congress or any other debtor to demand payment of a debt, you see. So nothing is done here that is, now it's moving toward illegality, but at this point, it's not illegal, except their intent is fraud, so yes, it is in that sense, because it's against the law to reach an unlawful result using a lawful process. That's always been true. It's still true. It's against the law to use a lawful process to achieve an unlawful result. But from here on, as I talk, the stew grows real foul. So in return for this unwritten favor not to demand payment on the $700 of IOUs, the bank agrees to do two things for Congress. First, to sign as many IOUs, that is Federal Reserve notes, as Congress wants to print. Second, loan to Congress any amount of these IOUs, Federal Reserve notes, called money, it is signed. Of course, Congress lays the burden of paying back principal and interest on the taxpayer. And these IOUs are, in fact, worth nothing. They're mere promises of more promises, ad infinitum, ad nauseam. Just as courts ought not enforce an agreement to agree to make an agreement. Now listen to that close. This is first year law school stuff. Courts do not enforce agreements to agree to make an agreement. Sometimes it's just called an agreement to agree. That's not enforceable. Not at common law. The common law contract says no. So also no court should enforce a promise to issue more promises, none of which ever say what is promised. Just a promise to issue more promises. What am I talking about? I'm talking about Federal Reserve notes. They're promises to pay money. That's what negotiable instruments are, paper negotiable instruments. They're promises to pay money, but these instruments do not promise anything. When I was a boy, I remember silver certificates issued greenbacks. They look just like our greenbacks. And it says at the bottom, redeemable. I still have some that my grandma had collected. Redeemable in silver upon presentment or some such a thing. Well, that's a promise, you see, written right on the paper. Well, that's legit as far as that goes. But the bills we have now, they look like the old bills, the old silver certificates, but they promise nothing. They're just illusory promises, promises to make a promise. Well, to sum up, with their unwritten side agreements, the bank has nothing of value to loan but the mere appearance the mere appearance of a promise. It can loan out and collect interest on $900, enabling it to pay off the $200 it owes Congress, but also to grow rich off the interest on the $900 worth of loans. $900 worth of loans over pieces of paper somebody waved a wand over and said they were worth $900 when the bank paid 6 cents apiece for printing them. But the senator, consider a senator, any senator, and the bank must do something to keep their victims from uncovering their secret side agreements, which would incite the people to demand that the congressmen and the bankers be jailed. So Congress passed legislation forbidding any audit of the Federal Reserve Bank's finances and financial dealings. This arrangement of illusory promises looks like a promise, smells like a promise, but when you look at it real close, it's not. It's just a promise to make more promises. This arrangement of illusory promises, called the means, through which appearing technically legal as a matter of contract law, are worthless. And its purpose, its end, is to defraud. It is therefore a crime. Simply put, it is a crime to achieve by legal means a goal that is illegal. And the law of crimes calls such an arrangement a conspiracy. What's a conspiracy? Con, spire. Con means with, spire means to breathe together, to speak together. Conspiracy, the spideration, the spirit, to have a common, a like kindred spirit in an agreement to defraud. That's what a conspiracy is. And its participants are called co-conspirators. Isn't it something that the very folk that are running the conspiracy accuse patriots of conspiracy theorism, of being conspiracy theorists? Well, that's the way it always is, isn't it? Ye who accuse, says Paul the Apostle, are guilty of, and he says it just like this, not something different, the very same thing of which you accuse the other fellow. Period. Boy, I've lived long enough to see that in spades. It's humbling when you think about that. Very clever. Sounds like a contract, feels like a contract, smells like a contract, but it's not. Why? Because a contract is an agreement the courts can enforce, and no court can enforce the words, "I promise," if nothing is promised. Congress's agreement to indebt the country in exchange for the bank's promise to loan as many false promises, that is, Federal Reserve notes, to Congress as Congress wants to print and give to the bank in exchange for the empty promises, bonds, that is, the bank gives Congress. In fact, the law forbids any court to enforce such an empty shell game. And by the way, as I've said before, don't expect to make sense of the statements I've made here. This circuit, that means circle, of transactions beginning with worthless paper IOUs and beginning and ending where they begin, have laundered the IOUs. This is money laundering. Having laundered the IOUs into supposed worth, when collapsed into one, is a nullity, as empty of value as a blown bladder. What's the upshot? Well, the upshot is this. The bank can loan out at interest $900 worthless IOUs. That's what they can do. Congress can get all the loans it wants from the bank, and to keep this sham from being uncovered, Congress has pushed legislation barring anyone from auditing the bank's financial affairs. But to make matters worse, Congress has given the Federal Reserve bankers absolute secrecy in their dealings, domestic and international, saying that they need to protect our economy. Our economy. Really. If the state of the economy is any indication of their ability or desire to keep our economy stable, it's time for the Federal Reserve bankers to be audited in detail. And this confusion alone should convince any sound mind of an illegitimate union between government and the Federal Reserve Bank. Their supposed money machine is like most gold mines, a hole in the ground with liars at the top and dupes at the bottom. It's an illusion, a ruse, a fantasy. There is no contract to enforce, nothing of any worth to deliver. No court can find value in empty promises such as Federal Reserve notes, because they are merely illusions. purporting to be a promise, using legal lingo meant to satisfy a promise of value, such as Federal Reserve note written across the top of the paper along with the impressive words, Treasury of the United States. Like a true promissory note, Federal Reserve notes do say, I promise, but unlike true promissory notes, they do not say what they promise. Promise what? Love and affection? I don't think that's it. Answer, they promise nothing, not even that. 100% of nothing, the law of the miner, 100% of nothing is nothing. Income taxes are the device intended to bind all this empty charade. The first sentence of an oft-consulted treatise on criminal tax law says that every American that files a tax return is a potential target for a grand jury indictment. I don't want to bring my own time. Oh, I'm okay. I'll just got another couple of things here. So America's plight of oppression, in its folly laid bare. Americans are subdued into fantasy, an empty hole in the ground, moiling for written promises of nothing. I want to end by saying this, and I say it with all conviction and with all experience. If you buck this system called the Federal Reserve System and its income tax, you face the possibility of criminal indictment and jail. But that doesn't change the truth of the matter. That's the truth of the matter. What I've said is true. It's a sham. It's a charade. It's a money. It's a almost said money machine. That's not what it is. It's a machine of fraud and deceit. But we're advised not to go up against it, square off with it. You'll be crushed. I tell you that in no uncertain terms. The laws are written to protect them. Are they laws? Well, not really. There's no law. There's no right to do wrong, and there's no law that's right that protects people in fraud. Well, then, why is it we should be careful? Because the folks that enforce these so-called laws have much force. Much force. They have a monopoly on force. And the only thing that will make any of this fall, this will be my last statement, the other one was my next to the last, that will make this fall is when people come to the conclusion and really do not believe that these pieces of paper have any worth. The only reason they work now is because there's a critical mass of people using these pieces of paper and these now computer entries about pieces of paper. There's a critical mass of people that believe, have faith that these things will work. And that's what money's all about. Whether or not you believe that what you have in your hand really has worth. Whether it's an ounce of gold or an ounce of silver or a piece of paper with green ink on it and a picture of a president of the United States. Back to you, Gerard. Thanks for the time.
I'm on two screens. This is fun. I just wanted to make a comment. You know, I read a treatise on money that talked about what happens when you go get a loan. And they said, you know, they don't lend you any money. It's just a journal entry. The bank doesn't actually have $20,000 in the vault it's giving you. You go in, you sign the loan, and they make a journal entry that they're loaning you $20,000. Then what they do is they take your promise to pay and they sell that out in the market. They monetize that. So in effect, they didn't give you anything. They're making money on your signature. And then you go through like a dutiful person and you pay the loan every month. And when you get to the end of it, they just erase the journal entry. Well, they never gave you anything. You gave them money. They made money on your signature all along the way, you know, plus they're able to lend out 10 times the money you get that's in there. But besides that, when the loan is paid, they erase the journal entry a little each month, it goes down, And at the end, they just wipe it out. But what didn't they erase? They didn't erase the interest they charged you on the money that never existed in the first place. So if you get that loan for 4%, 10%, 12%, whatever it is, they charged you interest on non-existing money, and then you paid the interest, and there's not enough money in existence to pay back all the principal and the interest that they're writing. It's a Ponzi scheme from the get-go. So all that interest keeps accumulating. It has to fall down because they're lending money that they didn't print, and you're paying back money with interest that they never erased at the end of the end loan. So that was more money made out of thin air, the interest that you paid them, which is kind of hard to get your head around. I mean, it's crazy. It shows you how crazy they are. But anyway, let's see. We got questions in here. I was going to open up JoJo Baby. She had one last thing she wanted to ask about with her property and the building inspector. Hey.
I just wanted to ask somebody's opinion about vindictive prosecution.
Yeah, what about it?
Okay, so I was watching Bill Thornton,
mm-hmm.
and he brought up a case that's not like our case, but said, like, if we put a case in, an action in against these people, the code and everything,
mm-hmm.
and if they turn around and try to, bring charges and stuff, that could be classified as
vindictive persecution.
Prosecution. Well, usually, if you're going after them from a charge that they've made, the only thing that they may do sometimes, like a city or a town or whatever, if you're suing them and you lose, they could charge you the legal fees that they paid their lawyers to defend it. I've heard of that. I don't think they'll go for vindictive prosecution. You know, Brent might want to comment on.
No, we would go for the vindictive prosecution because they were coming back at us. And something about it not having to be proven, it's basically, it is what it is. So
I don't know. I just know,
okay.
You're making a charge of vindictive prosecution. They need to defend themselves.
No. If they come back at us again too hard after we put this case in.
Yeah, then you could file a case for vindictive prosecution, right?
Okay.
It depends on how your case goes and how you made the first case.
You know what I'm saying?
So if they come in and they find a new charge and they make up a new charge and they say, well, you're not in compliance because of this, and they dream up something new, it's hard to call that well, you could call it because if you show a pattern of this, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, because they've been hassling him, and he was kind enough to be good, a good person and just be pleasant about it. But they've come after him. This is like three strikes. They only give us three strikes. Three strikes and you're out.
Right.
You know? And
right.
So it's totally uncalled for, because he repurposes stuff. It's not junk. He makes some really good stuff, and he leaves a small footprint, you know what I mean? Instead of going out and buying new and blah, blah, blah. Very ingenuitive. He's an incredible guy, and I think that they're way off the chain. And we're just trying to think of the best strategy to be able to get remedy, to be able to get these asses off our, get them off.
Right. Well, I think the best advice is to not be the plaintiff and not the defendant in this case.
Oh yeah.
You go on the offense with them, and they may not have a stomach for it. I don't know this building inspector. He came out because somebody put him up to it, and so he had a complaint from somebody. And
it's code enforcement. Yeah.
Yeah, it's code enforcement, but he had a complaint from the pretty police or whoever this woman is that
right.
And if she's an official, if she's running an organization, that's worse for her, because she's not one of your peers. She's not just a person in the community. She's pushing an agenda. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that makes it even worse on her part. You know?
Okay, so there were some aspects of this, because he came out there and stuff, and he started the sentence that goes kind of like this: you have a complaint. And as the process went on, second time around, he goes, now there's many people complaining. I think he went around to the neighborhood and tried to provoke that, you know, in his investigation. He's trying to ally shop with people in the neighborhood.
Yeah, it gets very ugly, and he's playing a dangerous game. Because let me tell you something, if he says there's many people complaining, He's not gonna tell you who those people are. But they're gonna keep it anonymous, you know, so to speak. So you end up in all this petty stuff, but it's valid, like in your case, because they're attacking you. What it does is it opens the door up for a whole bunch of stuff to go on. Look, you could drive around and take pictures of your neighbor's property and make your own complaints and say, look, you're selectively enforcing, because look what this guy got. Look what
Jerry
this guy got.
That, exactly. That's what Jerry said. That's when he was like, that's when he found out. He goes, all you got to do is look around. He goes, but I'm not that petty. I'm not going to.
No, but I would document that stuff and use it as evidence in my case.
Okay,
you know?
So let me
and a matter
ask
fact,
you.
The best thing to do is go to the woman's yard and the building inspector's yard and look for things on their property.
That would be the first one,
and then put your anonymous complaint in.
right. What do you think about aggravated collective trespass?
Well, look,
against
that,
them.
You can all that stuff, you know, is after the fact in a different court. You're talking about suing them in a higher court or a federal court, you know.
So what do we put in now then? Wouldn't we put our case in with all?
Oh yeah, no. I mean, they've already done what they're doing, and so you can go ahead and challenge that with what you have already.
No, so what happened is they gave us the notice to abate. They haven't actually given the ticket yet. Okay, that does summons to show up in court.
It doesn't matter. You can sue anybody, anytime, for anything. There's no legal...
Right.
In other words,
I can sue you
for defamation of character. There's no guidelines on that. Now, it's better you don't wait for a ticket. You can go after the building inspector and this woman, saying, look, you're doing a vindictive thing, a political thing, whatever you're doing. You know what I mean?
What I can offer wouldn't be challenge to jurisdiction. That's why I was saying, what about...
No, it wouldn't be a challenge to jurisdiction. What you would be doing is you would be suing them in their official capacity. And the woman, if she's nobody, you're suing her personally for making false reports and ruining your reputation and stuff.
Right, so the heading on that action, aggravated collective trespass.
Yeah, you could put that down, absolutely, yep.
Because I looked up, because I was trying to look up what they were trying to say about him, and, you know, we run the trespass, because that's what they're doing. They cost them a lot of money. But then when you say collective, you go into the thing where more than one have actually come together against them, and then I'm aggravated because it's been more than once. So I just don't want to seem too whatever, but I need to know.
When you fight this thing, you gonna write the case up yourself, or are you gonna bring it to somebody that knows law, like a lawyer?
No lawyer. But Jerry's gonna tell me his deal, and I'm gonna sweeten it up a little bit.
Well, if you're gonna look, in order to write the case, and you think you're gonna get a jury trial, that's tough in the first place. They won't want to give you a jury trial. They're gonna try to get this thing to go away long before that point.
Okay.
But you got to make sure you write it properly. And you got to make sure that you put in what you expect, what you want. You know, in your wherefore clause, it has to be very clear of what you're seeking.
Okay.
You know, so.
Right, and that's why I was asking about the aspect of the vindictive prosecution.
Yeah, so they always look at it. It's always good to put a name of a
trespass, right?
Right. It's always good to put a name of a crime like that or a statute that they're violating because that's what they're used to and that's what they're looking for.
Exactly.
You know, you want to give them something that they're used to getting, sticking their teeth into, and that'll scare them more than just making a bunch of claims. If you make claims that sound, you know, with official names and certain statutes and codes, you know, or U.S. code even that they broke, you know, violating your unalienable rights, because that's
right.
Where this could go to the Supreme Court for that type of stuff, violation of, you know,
right,
you know the you know, USC 18 and 42 and all that stuff. But anyway,
right.
I think you're in pretty good shape, and just do that. And you don't have to wait for them to write you a ticket. You can go.
Okay.
Matter of fact, you're probably better off going after them up front. But don't, just be careful. You know, they might get vicious, and you're gonna, you know.
They do get vicious.
Well, they might get more vicious. Yeah.
I'm expecting it. And I've told Jerry he needs to prepare for it, too, because if you don't have your stuff, if you don't have your I's dotted and your T's crossed and you got it locked down tight, they'll rip you apart.
When you go in with this case, if you lose, they could charge you their legal costs. That's something that they could ask for.
Okay.
Just
so
beware
of
that.
I wanted to put a stipulation in there. Worst of worst, I thought it would look kind of good for the judge to think that he makes a ruling, and I told Jared, if it gets ugly enough, the worst comes to worst, the clause in the backside that allows them to think that they won. And I don't have it written out yet, but it's the least that they'll be able to do to us if we don't defend ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I got that from the lawyer guy when they were asking about, well, how do I make this non-redoable? The trust that they were talking about 3 or 4 weeks ago? She said,
an unrevocable trust.
Yeah, well, you put a clause in the contract, right? Don't you put a clause in your action to where they really got nowhere to go?
Yeah, I don't know about that. Where they can't come back after you for the case that you threw at them, I don't know.
But they're dead. They're a dead thing. How? You know what I mean? They're trying to get us now anyway. So, yeah. Okay, you're right. I have to lay out the strategy.
Yeah, you got to think about it before you do it. Make sure you think all the angles. All right.
Yeah. Definitely.
Keep us posted how you make out.
Definitely.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. I'm gonna go to Heather from, what is that, Michigan? Heather Lee. Hey,
good evening. It's Heather Lee. And
yep.
I just have, it's interesting. I was going to ask another question, but I guess what I want to say is I just got a text from the White House, and it said from the White House, from the President, and it says executive order on combating human trafficking and online child exploitation in the United States. And I'm just wondering if other people have gotten this. It's the whole bill on my phone, which I find incredible. I've never had that before.
It was his executive order that he signed.
Yes.
Against human trafficking and exploitation. But I think he signed that when he first went into office. That's what he's operating off of.
Well, it says here that it was issued on January 31, 2020. But I just, while we were talking this evening, I just got this beep and this tweet, and I opened it up, and here's the whole entire order.
So he must be doing something more, because he did sign a bill that anybody that was helping these people, you know, that were doing this child trafficking and stuff, that they could go after them and anybody that helped them when he first came into office. But they've been doing a lot of busting up of these rat lines that our politicians are making money on. unfortunately, you know, we got a lot of slimy people in office, and I don't know, it's very ugly, and it runs through the whole system, and I'm hoping he's going to go after all of them. I don't know how, you know, you can go after all of them, because you can't put them in the court systems that we have, because they, you know, like, my goodness, if you ever arrested, if you ever ran after Schumer or Clinton, and you tried to prosecute them in the Southern District of New York, those judges are all, they're judges, they're made men, they got the goods on them, you're never going to get a conviction, so they'd have to take them to Gitmo, and see, he's going to use the Patriot Act against these people. They put the Patriot Act
waterboard them.
Well, now he's going to bring them in there, and he's going to give them a military tribunal, because stuff that Clinton did was treasonous. She gave things away to our enemies. And so, and she was a Secretary of State, so it's like she's an official. I think that they can get away with charging her in, you know, off of the, you know, in off of the land in Guantanamo Bay under a military tribunal.
Right.
Kind of stretching the Constitution, but, you know, these people have been, you know, raping
and wicked and murderous,
literal and figurative. That's right. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. I mean, a lot of people claim that that's what he's planning on doing, but we shall see.
Well, this says it's strengthening the federal responsiveness to human trafficking. So he must have just put this through to strengthen what he already established in law, and. I don't know why he thought that. I mean, I do care, and I'm very impressed. It's signed here by the president, Donald J. Trump, the White House. Anyway,
well,
I don't know how they got my text.
Look, there's going to be an explosion of arrest out there, because all of Hollywood is in this. I mean, Jeffrey Epstein, his job was to get the goods on the judges and the prosecutors. You know, you don't get in those offices. It's like joining the mob. You know, they put a gun in your hand and make you kill somebody, and they record it, so that in the future you're not going to rule against them if they get pulled into court, because they own you. And he knows that. He worked down there in that Southern District. That's where he did all of his business. So, I mean, if anybody knows the evil that they're fighting, it's him. So we shall see. And I'm hoping
this is kind of exciting in these times. You know, everybody is pretty much on lockdown. Not quite, but pretty much there. The state of Michigan is there now. The governor announced it today. Everybody stay in your homes, no traveling, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that this will be very interesting biblically as well as politically, each move that's made. I had a question as to, has anyone heard of the reinforcements on our borders with threats from Iran, China, and Russia?
I haven't heard any of that. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard that there was threats from Iran or Russia.
All right, just was wondering if others had gotten any other news on that. I usually go through the newsletter, but I didn't see anything. So, all right. I guess that is, I forgot what my question was. It just kind of blew it out of my mind when you get the bill on your phone, the complete bill on trafficking, human trafficking. You know, I've been praying against it. Oh, I guess that's what the whole thing was, the reason I was in the queue. I wanted to announce Tuesday night prayer group with Barbara Bilek. She is very powerful, and she's in prayer every day. She had set up at 9 o'clock tomorrow night on the NLA on this very same number. So if anyone feels led to join, two or more gathered together in his name, you can ask what you will of the Father, and it shall be done. So that's a pretty powerful statement from the Word of God, and God is not a man that he should lie, not like the Federal Reserve.
Right.
So anyway, I just invite everyone to come and join us in prayer on all the issues. There are many issues of all kinds, and of course we uplift the NLA, asking the Father to really reinforce all the efforts that are done by each person and to spread the good word on freedom, the freedom that comes from God and God alone through what He has initiated through the Constitution. So some things only come by prayer and fasting, people. And if you hear my voice, I just lovingly admonish you and welcome you to come and pray with us. The Lord sees that and He honors it.
Amen to that. And if there's any, if there was ever a time, this is it. We're so close now, it's not even funny.
I didn't think
I'd ever live to see these days, and I'm almost afraid to hope, because it's such a big, huge. It's such a David and Goliath problem. It really is.
Well, you know, the Lord in His Word, in all the books of the Bible, but particular books, and majority of the books actually speak of the end time and speak of God's power. It also speaks of His fury against the wicked, and that their day will come, and it is assured. And so if we are standing in the midst of it, it could be an exciting time for those that believe the Word of God. And yes, to see the manifestation of God's Word put into action, and knowing that God protects His own, but He also brings tribulation to bring all men unto Him. He would that none perish. And so to pray for such a time as this, in such a time as this, for people's souls, as well as the stability of our government, God's government, and His people, and His righteousness in our land. It's just imperative, and this is the time.
Well, if you know the attributes of God and how He operates, it makes sense, because He always, before He helps His people, it's always, He waits until it's such an impossible task. It's with such a remnant, with such a small force, that way you can't deny that it came from
Him. And He gets the glory, and we don't.
That's right, and that's where we're at, as far as I'm concerned, because to me, it's an impossible task in human terms.
Right, so, but the Word of God says nothing is impossible with God.
That's
nothing.
Right.
And
yeah,
He makes a way where there seems not to be a way. He makes a way, and it nothing is going to be greater than Him, because
right,
He is all sovereign, omnipotent, omnipresent. And he owns this heaven and earth, hello, mm-hmm, and not the Luciferians.
Yep.
Yes.
Well,
it is not Satan's world. It was never Satan's world. He's the prince of the power of the air. He's all hot air, like
right,
Brent would say, it's all air.
Right, well.
And there'll be a day when we say, Is this Satan? Is this who you are? Is this all there is?
That's what's happening right now anyway. You look at guys like Joe Biden and you go, oh my goodness, is this the best you can do? Anyway.
Yeah, look, he doesn't, you know, if I only had a brain, said Scarecrow,
right,
you know. Yeah,
anyway,
and I guess
I want to move on to some other people, but it's been good. We can keep this going all night, believe me.
We good. All right, blessings.
Okay, thank you.
See you tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Blessing.
Yeah. Okay, Barbara from New York, go ahead.
Hi, this is Barbara from New York.
Yes.
Hi, I just wanted to bring up my experience with, I called the Board of Elections, Westchester County today.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to say how they responded. So they I wanted, you know, I couldn't, I wanted to get exact days because I figured maybe they closed down on it because of the virus. And they told me that, I had looked it up on their website on March 16th, and I didn't see that they had like two-page calendar and then another calendar. And on the two-page calendar, so she told me we had it up on the website. We had to shut it down because of the virus. And so it says, when you see the second page, which I hadn't seen before of this two-page thing, it said revised on the 18th that they had shut it down as of the 17th. And then she told me that she had that Republicans don't come up for election for county committeeman this year. That it's like only Democrats this year, Republicans next year for county.
Yeah, they do that. They switch off. They switch odd and even years. That's,
oh, really?
Yes,
oh.
They do. Yes. You can run if the seat is vacant, though. In other words, they may not have somebody sitting in that seat in your precinct. You know, a precinct is a small number of blocks. So
uh-huh.
You should find out who's in a precinct. And you can put in an application if it's empty. And that bugs them because they don't fill all those precincts. They don't even bother. They don't even walk petitions, really. They just sign each other's. You know, they got it reduced to a big
right.
scheme. So if you go out and you walk in a precinct and it's Republican and there's nobody sitting in that seat, guess what? And you get 5% of the signatures and nobody else walked that precinct, you're deemed elected in that precinct. And you get that 1 year. You'll have to run again the following year in the odd year, the even year, whatever it is. But you'll fill that year of that empty seat. At least I'm pretty sure that that's how it works.
Well, for one thing, she said that when we closed down the date early, we changed it to a smaller percentage. So they brought it down to 1.5% as opposed to 5%. So
mm-hmm.
they reduced it. But she said you can't run for it. And she said the only thing you can do is contact the chairman and ask him to appoint you, and he may appoint you.
Yeah, because what they're talking about is appoint you in an open vacancy.
Yeah,
but you don't have to kiss the chairman's ring. That's what they want you to. And you don't want to be appointed. You want to be deemed elected.
No, definitely.
So if you find out that there's empty seat somewhere, go to that precinct and go door to door and get signatures. And now you only have to get, instead of 5%, you just said, what, 1.5% or something?
One and a half.
That's easy.
I don't know. In Westchester, I don't have a sense of how much that would be. But I did ask her three times.
Well, if there's 100 people,
uh-huh.
I don't know how you do 1.5. It takes like less than 2 signatures then.
Really? Oh, my gosh.
Right.
I asked her three times. Is there somebody in that position now? And she said she wouldn't answer it. She said you need to talk to the chairman.
Yeah.
And she also, I heard that. I saw that.
She's not going to give you. You're not going to give you too much information. Yeah.
She also said you can't run this year. You can't do that. And they shut it down. Virus, so I don't
well look at they're operating under party rules, and each party makes their own rules. However, they can't change the law. The election law says that if you walk the petition and you get the percentage of signatures that's required and you fill out your petition in this district that fashion, they have no choice. And you don't need to kiss the ring of the county chair. You don't. You really don't. You get to petition and make it right and fill it out right, and submit it. And you know, I would, if I was doing it, because if you want to run as a Republican and it's an off year, but you're going to run for a seat that's open, I would submit the petition to the, I would submit it to the chairman after the fact, after the after it's over. I would give him one, and I would give the Board of Election one. And say, look, I walk my petition, and I submit, and I would submit it to the Board of Elections like you normally would, and they would say, oh well, there's no, they're not running this year. Well, I'm running for an open seat. It would probably get straightened out right there, to be honest with you, because the first thing they're gonna do is call the county chair. And you go, well, why don't you do that? I'll just appoint you. You say, no, I don't want to be appointed. I want to. So go out and get the signatures first, and then submit the application at the Board of Elections. Their jaw is going to hit the ground. He's going to say, well, I'm running for a vacant position, and I don't think they can refuse you.
Okay.
Because it doesn't matter if it's odd or even. If there's nobody in it, like let's say there was somebody in it, and they left, they resigned, they died, whatever, don't tell me that position can't be filled, because normally that's what you do even in an election. Like let's say it's, you know, the Senate runs every so many years and the Congress runs every, you know, opposite. They do the same thing on a national level. But if a seat comes open, they have an opportunity where the party can appoint, or you run in the next election year, even though it's an off year, and then you run until the next cycle. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a completely abnormal thing what I'm telling you to do. What they do, you know. I mean, this is just committee man. They consider it a very low position, but it's still an elected official, you know.
Okay, I do need to get though from them a list of. I'm going to have them give up a list of who is eligible to give their signatures, right?
You need to find out who the registered person, people in there, and like if you're going to do a Republican, you need a walking list, they call it.
Yeah.
So they should give you that, and if they don't, you need to FOIA request it. That's public knowledge. You want a list of all the registered Republicans in the county, and then you could pick a street or whatever, a precinct, and walk them in that walk that precinct.
When I watched the videos, they said you have to do it by town. If you don't do it by town, it's not just county-wide, right?
No, it is by town. You're right, and you got to make sure you put the name of the town that you're running for. They'll throw your freaking your application in the garbage if you have any mistakes at all. Like I live in a, even though I have a town, my town is not the same as my address because I live in a hamlet. So I put down my address, but then I put down the town in parentheses. Because if you don't put the name of the town, they go, oh, that's not valid. You know, because the hamlet's not big enough to be a political subdivision or whatever. It is by the town.
Does that mean that the list is registered Republicans in the county, and also, but it has to be within the town?
Oh, no, they give you everything. They give you everybody in the county. Well, you could ask for just the town, the registered people in the incorporated town. You don't need the whole county. That's a big list. You want it for the town that you're going to run in, because you want to narrow it down. You don't want some big crazy list.
Is that hard?
But I've gotten them. It's because we don't have that big of towns and cities around here, so I've gotten them where I look up each town. And, you know, there might be 1,100, 1,200 names, you know what I mean, 1,000, you know, a couple thousand, you know, tops, because we're not that populated here, you know.
But I have to get it from the Board of Elections. Like, there's no other.
No, you don't have to. You mean the list?
Yeah.
Well, that's who has it. I don't know where else you get it. I mean, you think they would put it online, but it should be public information. You want a list of all the registered Republicans, let's say, in that particular town. They should give it to you.
Now, we're not supposed to we're told we're not supposed to leave our house except for essential activities, which is grocery shopping and...
I would not go walking that list during this thing because they'll arrest your butt.
Yeah.
No, you gotta look at, they're gonna extend the walking days anyway. Just pay attention to what they tell you, what the days are. That's all.
Well, they said it was done on the 17th of March, that no more acquiring signatures.
Oh, so they already walked it.
Yeah.
They made that
pronouncement on the 18th. They said, oh, yesterday was the deadline.
That was their normal deadline, and that had nothing to do with the virus.
Well, it was April the 2nd, and she said that they moved it to March the 17th because of the virus. I said, why didn't you move it into the future? She said, well, that he wanted to get it all through and done. The governor wanted to get it all through.
I don't think that's legal. They're supposed to lengthen it, not shorten it.
That's what I said to her. Why didn't you lengthen it?
That's the exact opposite of what they're doing. They're going to give you more time to fill your taxes, but they're going to give you less time to walk your papers. That's a lawsuit as far as I can see.
Plus, they made the announcement, according to the online, they said they made the announcement on the 18th that it had to be in by the 17th. That's what it says, revision March 18th. The deadline is now March the 17th. It was April the 2nd.
They're really, I don't know, that right there sounds like an illegal thing. You know.
You're in New York State, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the things that go on.
Yeah, no, it doesn't sound kosher at all. But anyway, I want to move on because we got a few more people and it is getting late.
I'm sorry, just one more question. Just wait until the, I mean, they're telling us that you can't do anything except grocery shop and...
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it now because you go door to door, forget about it. It's a good excuse to get rid of you. I wouldn't do it. And then the fact is that now that they made this proclamation that they closed it early, I would save that proclamation and I would take that to court. And I would fight them over that. How can you make it less time when everybody's getting more time?
Yeah,
it's only because they're dealing with people who aren't really elected and they're appointed by the party chair, so they're not taking it serious because they're private associations and they feel comfortable doing whatever they want to do. That's all. That's
right.
Why they think they can get away with it.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think she would have come up with any excuse. Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Okay. Okay, Ed from Arizona, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Ed from Arizona.
Yeah.
The lady that was just on, they give her a list of the people in her precinct, and that's different than the city. It's just the precinct. We have a small town, and we have like 8 precincts, so I need 3 signatures for mine, but it's the precinct that she needs a list for.
Well, if she knows what precinct she's going to run in, you really should be living in the precinct you're running, but they don't hold everybody to that. As long as there's nobody in it, I like to get the full list because then I can pick a precinct. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And but you're right. All she technically needs is the registered Republicans or Democrats in her precinct.
And listed by precinct, they'll have a different...
Yeah, it should be listed by precinct. In other words, they list it, like, wherever you vote, it has a number, zone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's your precinct. And when they give you the names of the listed Republicans, they always break it up by precinct anyway.
Right.
So if you know what precinct you're in, you can walk just that precinct. It makes it easier. Well, you have to walk whatever precinct that you're planning on running in. You can't walk it in a different precinct.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Well, look, we're after midnight. I don't know. I'm going to take one more. Mike from New York. Go ahead. Mike, Watchdog New York. You there? No, I guess not. Okay. I don't know who else I wanted to get to here there was a question I wanted to put for Brent, but we'll get it next week if that's the case. I'm having a senior moment. I don't remember what the issue was that I thought Brent was would be more after a legal question that I thought Brent would be good at. But anyway, we'll get it next week. Anyway, thank you everybody for coming, and I might have been JoJo Baby Terry. I don't really, it had something to do with, I don't remember, but I'm not going to strain my brain at this late hour. And if we think of it, we'll bring it up next week. So we got a few people that were there from next week, and I'll get the rest of them. Maybe we can make note of who's left in here, and I'll try to get them first next week. Okay? Thank you, everybody. God bless, and keep your powder dry, and we live in exciting times, and hey, don't forget, it's prayer time. We should be praying. We should be fasting and meditating at this time that we prevail over the forces of evil that have been ruling us for so long. It finally looks like a light at the end of the tunnel, and we really got to do everything in our power to push this thing forward. And it's not going to happen if we don't put every last bit of our strength, every last ounce of our sinew into this, and that includes fasting and praying, meditating, and doing the right thing. Okay, and so based on that, I'm going to say goodnight. I'm losing my voice. Thank you.